is sponsored by Josh Mitgang in memory of his grandmother. Her name is here on top of the page, Selina Mitgang, Charka Bas Ichiel Zeev, whose yahrzeit is today, and she should have an Aliyas Hanashama from our Divrei Torah. As we mentioned last week, we are about to celebrate the Yom Tov of Purim, and one of the most important aspects of the celebration of Purim is that we have the opportunity to perform a number of mitzvahs that are outlined in the Megillas Esther. One of those important mitzvahs is that of the mitzvah Mishloach Manos, that we have an obligation on Purim to give away gifts to our friends. And what I'd like to discuss today is to try to understand the nature of that mitzvah and how we properly fulfill it. There are many questions that come up every year. Many of them are similar to questions from previous years, and therefore it's worthwhile for us just to spend some time trying to lay down the guidelines of what the mitzvah of Mishloach Manos is really all about. So we begin with the pasuk in Megillas Esther. As we know, Haman had this terrible plot, this terrible decree, Vanahafachu, and everything turned around. Everything ended up miraculously being okay for the Jewish people. And finally, after that happened, Mordechai and Esther, who were the great leaders of the generation, decided that it was worthy of creating a holiday. It was worthy of creating a Yom Tov as a result of this great miracle that took place. Now, not every time that a miracle takes place do we have a right to institute a Yom Tov. Not every time that something happens to a community do we say that we have a right to make a new day on the calendaric year that is going to be a commemoration for years to come, which is a major controversy that developed around the time of Purim. What right did they have in their generation to institute a new holiday into the calendar? If the Torah says we have very specific holidays that we're supposed to celebrate, who said that Purim is worthy of a celebration? There have been many times that Jewish communities have been in a difficult circumstance, and yet they've been released in some way, and they've been relieved from that terrible tragedy, and we don't always make a celebration. And that was the major question regarding Yom HaTzmaut as well. Do we have a right to make a communal celebration, a new day on the calendar, to commemorate something which obviously was a great simcha for many of us, and we believe, in our community at least, that this was something that furthered the cause of the Jewish people and brought us closer to the Geula? But the question is that something that really has the right to be marked in the Jewish calendaric year or not? Yom Yerushalayim is the same question. But when it came to Purim, this was a major discussion, and it was not so easy. And Esther Hamalka asked, Kisvuni Lidoros. Esther asked, she was pleading with the generation, allow me to write this down for future generations, that everybody should always remember the story of what we went through. And it wasn't accepted right away. And it wasn't so simple that this was going to be something that the Jewish people would continue to commemorate for generations to come. Finally, in the end, we know that Megillas Esther was written, and it became a part of Tanakh. And it is the last Sefer of Tanakh that was written. It is the last one in our history that became a part of Tanakh. But once again, as I mentioned, this was not something that happened by itself. This came with major controversy revolving around that. The Jews of that generation certainly understood the magnitude of the miracle that took place. And what we're told in the end of Megillas Esther, Perek Tes, Pasuk Chaf Beis, if you look on the top, Kayamim asher nachu behem hayehudim me'oyveihem. The days that the Jews had the relief from their enemies, the days that they thought they would be suffering, but in the end, everything turned around. V'hachodesh asher nepach lahem miyagon l'simcha. And the entire month of Adar, that turned out to be this great celebratory month, me'evel liyamtiv. We thought that this was going to be a time when everybody would be attending funerals and burying the dead, but in the end it turned around to become a great day of celebration. So Mordechai and Esther got their way in the end, after all of the discussion, after all of the controversy. And by the way, Mordechai goes down in history as the great hero. But do you know that in the end of the Megillah, I was thinking this week whether we should give a halacha shiur, we should really go through points in the Megillah. Maybe next week we'll go through some points in the Megillah that are relevant for us to understand as we go through the story. But one of the things that always struck me is, we look at the story of the Megillah and we say, you know, Mordechai was this great hero. The people of his generation did not consider him a great hero at all. It says in the end of the Megillah, V'ratzui l'rov echav. What does it mean? V'ratzui means he was beloved by rov echav, by most of the people. What does that mean? Most of the people liked him? What about the rest of the people? How were there people who were against him? How were there people who didn't like what he did? After all, he was the reason for the entire celebration. He was the reason for the entire miracle that took place. So how can you not be a fan of everything that Mordechai HaTzadik was involved in? What does the pasuk mean when it says V'ratzui l'rov echav? And the answer that the Gemara gives is that Mordechai began his career as being the leader of the Sanhedrin. He began his career as being the greatest Talmud Chacham, the greatest Tzadik, and everybody looked up to him and everybody was asking him questions and he was going around teaching Torah. Then at some point in his life he decided it was time for him to get involved in politics. because nobody else was going to do it. And he understood that he has to take a break from his regular job of going around and teaching Torah and Paskening Shilas, and he has to get involved in government affairs. He has to start going to Albany. Nothing anybody wants to do, but somebody's got to do the job. So he started getting involved, and because of that, he became less of a prominent Talmud Chacham than he started off being, which is only natural. If you stop having the opportunity to learn, you are not going to continue to grow in learning. So that's what happened with Mordechai, and we're told that he was downgraded in the upper echelons of the great leaders of the generation. They looked at him after a period in time, and they said, you know, he's not as great as he used to be, and we're not so impressed with what he did, which is amazing. And what I always take away from that, I think the Imre Emes, one of the Ger Rebbes, had a comment, and he said, but in the end of the day, who was right? So you lost a little bit of kavod, so people don't look at you as respectfully as they used to, but who goes down in history as the hero of the story of Purim? The answer is Mordechai, which, writes the Imre Emes, is a reason for us to understand the context. Sometimes in life, we're expected to do things that we might not want to do, that may take a little bit of our kavod away, that might slight our own personal dignity, that might be something that is not so exciting for us to do, but this is what the times call for. This is what the Ribbono Shel Olam expects of me to do. Sometimes it's clear I'm the only one who can do such a thing. I'm the only one who can get involved in this, as much as I don't want to get my hands dirty. You know, my father is a tremendous advocate for Agunas. You think he has an interest in going to rallies? You think he really has an interest in signing pieces of paper and getting his name dragged through the mud? You think he's interested in being attacked in all the newspapers? Do you think, I don't know if any of you ever had the opportunity to be attacked by recalcitrant husbands who go after you because you try and support their wives to get a get. It's not such a simple thing to do. But sometimes a person understands this is what has to be done. And even though you pay a price for it, this is what the Ribbono Shel Olam expects of you. And yes, does it mean that life is going to be so simple as a result? No, but life is not meant to be so simple. And therefore, one of the important messages that we learn from Mordechai is, as much as he may have had some negative pushback from the members of his generation who very much started off respecting him, Mordechai HaTzadik understood that it was worthy of him losing that great title that he had, because in the end of the story, he was the one who created this entire great miracle, and that was all worth it. And he was the only one who could have done it. So what we learn from the Megillah is many, many profound lessons, but here was one of those times where Mordechai HaTzadik instituted for his generation, La'asoso sam yimei mishta v'simcha, that the days of Purim should become Yimei Mishta V'Simcha, which means a festive time of year. U'mishlach manos ish l're'ehu. Part of that mitzvah is that we have to send gifts to our friends. U'matanos le'evyonim. And we have an obligation to send gifts, not only gifts, but also we have to send money to those who are in need. So Mordechai, as we said, institutes three manifestations of celebration. Number one, it should be Yimei Mishta V'Simcha, a day in which we celebrate. Number two, it should be something which we engage in, mishlach manos ish l're'ehu, we have to send gifts. And number three, matanos le'evyonim. Now, we already find the Rambam writes in Hilchos Yamtiv. By every other Yamtiv that we find in the Torah, the Rambam says, v'samachta b'chagecha, we have an obligation to celebrate. And Mordechai patterns his Yamtiv midrabanan off of the regular v'samachta b'chagecha. He says it's yimei mishta v'simcha. At the same time, the Rambam writes in Hilchos Yamtiv that if a person only focuses on themselves or their family in the celebration of Yom Tov, let's say Pesach, you have a great time with your family, you go away to wherever it might be, to the aunts, to the uncles, to the cousins, to the grandparents, to the hotel, wherever a person might be for Yom Tov, it's a very festive time for us. But, says the Rambam, if a person doesn't make time over the course of a Yom Tov to focus on the aniyim, to focus on those who are in need and cannot enjoy a Yom Tov the way many of us might be able to, writes the Rambam very famously, Hareza Simchas Kreso, he says. That is not called Simchas Yamtiv, that is called Simchas Kreso. That is called a person is just fulfilling their own desires. And that is not a fulfillment at all of the mitzvah. Part of the mitzvah of celebrating a Yamtiv is that we need to make time to think about those who might not be able to celebrate a Yamtiv with us, which is why it's important that as a community we support the local Tomchei Shabbos that before Yom Tov make sure to give extra to the people who need. And as a community, we make sure just to think a little bit about those who might not be able to have the same experience. I can tell you personally, it meant a lot to our family to do it. And I think if others would consider it, we would have a little bit of a better world. And that is, before Yom Tov, we try our best to go. We have a bunch of neighbors on our block who are not religious, who are not observant. And I think that many of them are aware that we have a Yom Tov coming up. Many of them are aware that we have Pesach and we have Sukkot. So last year before Pesach, 2 years ago before Pesach, we did the same thing. We brought each one of them a box of matzahs and a bouquet of flowers. Let them feel. It's not that they need it. It's not that they don't have money to afford it on their own, but they will not have an experience of Yom Tov if we don't provide it for them. You know, last year we invited over our irreligious neighbors to eat with us. The Siddurim they were eating out in Barney's in Manhattan, which is great, which is fine for them. And I invited them over to come and join us for the other meals of Pesach. Why shouldn't they understand what it means to have a Yom Tov together? I think what the Rambam is teaching us is, not only do we have an obligation to look out for those who are in need physically because they cannot afford to have a Yom Tov experience, but why not think about those who spiritually might not have the opportunity to observe a Yom Tov the way it should be done, and it means a lot to them, and it should mean a lot to us also. It only enriches our entire community if we have participation of many. So that is with regard to the mitzvah of thinking about others, of Matanas Le'Avyonim, that is an integral part of every Yom Tov, not only of Purim, but it's an integral part of every Yom Tov that we celebrate as well. And finally, Mishloach Manos was the third mitzvah that Mordechai instituted, which is what we are going to talk about today. Before we begin the crux of the discussion, I'd like you to turn to the second side of the page at the very end, on number Ches and Tes, which is a discussion that really was amusing to me when I saw it, and it's not something that many speak about, and that is when we say in the Pasuk, Mishloach Manos Ish L'Re'ehu, that we have to send gifts to our friends. Now, how literally do we understand that word L'Re'ehu, to our friends? How much of a friend does the person have to be? So in contemporary education, you know, many people are struggling with the boundaries. How much does a teacher or an educator consider themselves a teacher, and how much should they consider themselves a friend? I think parents struggle with this sometimes as well. How much do you consider yourself a friend of your children, and how much do you consider yourself the authoritarian, and you're supposed to be a parent? So this is a question that I was surprised to see. What does it mean when we say, Mishloach Manos Ish L'Re'ehu? So I think the nice thing is for us to send Mishloach Manos to our teachers, to our parents. We have a sense of gratitude. We want to show them that we care, so we want to send them something. But my parent is not really my friend. My teacher is not supposed to be my friend. So does that mean that I have not fulfilled my mitzvah of Mishloach Manos if I send a gift to my parents or to my friends? It's hard for us to imagine such a thing, but maybe that's really something that's indicated in the Pasuk. So if you look, the Mahari Asad, which is number Ches, has a fascinating tshuva. He says, Masha Nestapek Kvot Taraso. He said, somebody sent him the following question. HaTalmid HaSholeach Manos L'Rabo. If you have a student who sends a gift to their Rebbe, im yotze bekach yidei chavatzo. Am I able to fulfill my obligation of Mishloach Manos by sending a gift to my teacher who I respect and revere very much? Inema, should I say, kiven dere'ehu ksiv? If you look carefully in the source of the obligation of Mishloach Manos, it says, you should send a gift lire'ehu, to your friend. Mechzi demashvi es rabba lire'ehu. Does it seem as if I am now considering my teacher as my friend? Maybe it's disrespectful to send it to one's teacher. Sounds counterintuitive, but he says maybe that should be the case. The Ma'ari Asad comes to the conclusion after a lengthy discussion, this is not at all a lack of respect to one's teacher or to one's parent. It is a great sign of appreciation and respect when you do that. And therefore he says, if you look through Chumash, many times you'll find that the Torah refers to somebody as Re'ehu. We have an obligation to treat someone in a certain way. Does that mean we don't treat our teachers in that way? We don't treat our parents in that way? Let's say it says, Lo Sashuk Es Re'acha. It means you're not allowed to rip somebody off. So it means if I own a store and my parents come to shop in my store, so then I should rip them off? I should take advantage of them? Obviously not. When the Torah says Re'ehu, it means other Jews, other people who are coming into my store, who I consider to be my friends. It's not a lack of respect to refer to my parents in such a way, even though I certainly do not treat them in such a way. And therefore he says, this is something that he would not take as a question at all. The Aderes, who was the father-in-law of Rav Kook, and he was a great tzaddik, a great Talmud Chacham, a towering figure, writes this also in one of his svarim. And as I said in the past, he was a great tzaddik before Rav Kook came along, and before his son-in-law was who he was. And the Aderes writes as follows, Ani Amarti, he says, I said, Eftach Pischa L'Nafshai, he says, I had a question for many, many years that has been bothering me, and that is, I find it interesting that he had the same question, And he shares his problem with us. And he says, I had a dilemma. Is a Talmud, is a student allowed to send Shalach Manos to the Rebbe? In Mekayim Mitzvahs Mishlach Manos. Kima Shekasva Poskim Le'inin Avel V'Isha. V'Kol Shekain Keshekan Ksiv Manos L'Re'eyu. V'Chavrin Karilei. How do you call your teacher or your parent? How do you call them a friend? How do you call them Re'eyu? V'Nisararti Lazeh. He says, what made me think about this? He says, I didn't just wake up one day and have this thought. He says, what made me think about it is, B'Yosi B'Vilna B'Purim Shnas Tav Resh Chaf Hei. I don't know how to do the math, but you do it on your own. So, he was in Vilna on Tav Resh Chaf Hei, V'lo Hayali Makir Zulas Avi V'Yedidi. For some reason, he got stuck in Vilna, even though he was the Av Beis Din in Panevish. So he says, he was traveling somewhere, he gets stuck in Vilna, he says, here I am, Purim, I have an obligation to do the Mitzvah Mishloach Manos, but I don't know anybody. I got stuck here. So who do I give to? I'm just going to knock on the first door that I see? So he says, then I reminded myself, there's a great tzaddik in the generation by the name of Rabbi Tzalan HaKohen Mivilna. He was a great Talmud Chacham, very well known. So he says, hey, I know him. Maybe I should ask somebody where he lives. But then he says, V'nistapakti, I wasn't sure. Imeshlach lo manos l'kayim mitzvah sayom. Would I actually be able to fulfill my obligation by walking into his home with my shalach manos? V'yareisi l'hikara rea l'gadol adar kamoh. Vani ha'isi o yamin bimei olami. He says, how could I knock on his door and say, hey, you are my friend, you are somebody that I know, and I can fulfill my mitzvah mishloach manos by giving it to you. So that was the question that he had. And I find it interesting because if you look through Shulchan Aruch and a number of places, you'll find every once in a while we do use this phrase of re'ehu. And there's a discussion in each one of those places, is it to include parents and teachers or not? For example, the Gemara says in Maseches Brachos, I didn't put it on here, the Gemara is in Brachos Daf Nun Ches, the Gemara says, if you see somebody after 30 days, you say a bracha of shecheyanu. So the Gemara is assuming that you lost contact with them, you had no idea that they were still alive, not like today where we still have communication, and that we would find out if somebody, Rahmana Litzlan, was no longer alive. We all find out about that, unfortunately. So the Gemara says, we're talking about a case where you really have no idea whether somebody's still around, and it's a good friend of yours, and you're very excited about the fact. After 30 days, you haven't heard from them. You don't know what the story is. So the Gemara says you make a bracha of shecheyanu. What if 12 months go by and you have not heard or seen from that person and you really have a suspicion that maybe something happened to them? Says the Gemara, after seeing them for 12 months period of time, you recite a bracha of mechaya hamesim. Writes the Maharsha, why do you make a mechaya hamesim? What, did they have a resurrection from the dead? Nothing happened to them. So the Maharsha comments that every year when we go through the season of Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, you never know what's going to happen. So yes, it is worthy of making a mechaya hamesim on someone after 12 months because, unfortunately, we see what can happen in the course of a year. Many terrible tragedies can happen when it's least expected, and therefore writes the Maharsha, it is, in fact, almost like a tchias hamesim. When you have the ability to see someone a year later that you knew nothing about, writes the Maharsha, it's worthy of making a brachat mechaya hamesim because you really never would have known what took place and what could have happened. So the discussion that comes about as a result of that, the Birkei Yosef, the Chida writes in his commentary on Shulchan Aruch, well, what happens if you've lost contact with a parent? So today it's not so relevant because usually we have contact with our parents, or you lose contact with a teacher of yours who you respect and admire very much. So do you make a bracha of mechaya hamesim if you see them after a year? Well, if you look back in the Gemara, the source of this whole halacha, the Gemara says, haroa es chaveiro. La'achar shloshim yom, or haroa es chaveiro la'achar yud beis chodesh. If you see your friend, so writes the Birkei Yosef, am I going to say this bracha when I see my parent or my teacher that I lost contact with for the past year? Would you make a bracha mechaya hamesim? Isn't that disrespectful to call my parent a chaveiro, to call them my friend? And he comes to the conclusion, of course it's not disrespectful. This is the greatest honor you can show your parents, how excited you are to see them when you knew nothing about their whereabouts, when you were concerned about them. And he says, he brings a proof from the Megillah Esther, where we're told, U'mishlach manos ish l'reyehu, writes the Birkei Yosef, would anybody in their right mind ever say that you're not allowed to give shalach manos to your parents or to your teachers? Of course not. And therefore he says, the same way one is allowed to give shalach manos to their parents because we refer to parents as re'ehu, then so too we would assume one is allowed to make this bracha on parents or on teachers because we can refer to them as Re'ehu in this context. Let's go back to the first side of the page, and let's have a discussion about the nature of the mitzvah of Mishloach Manos. A question that is asked every year about Mishloach Manos and Matanos Le'Evyonim is, what money am I allowed to use for Matanos Le'Evyonim? And this is a very important question that we need to think about. we have an obligation. It's a question what exactly the nature of the obligation is. We're not going to get into it now because this is not the shiur about Maaser Kesefim. But there is an understanding that we're supposed to be giving 10% of our assets away to those who are in need. Maaser Kesefim, that is something, a concept that many of us know quite well. Now, because we assume Maaser Kesefim is not an absolute obligation, but Maaser Kesefim is simply a minhag that developed over the years, that is the opinion of most of the Achronim, because that's the assumption, therefore, we also believe that a person who is not in a position to be giving 10% of their assets should not be giving it away. For example, a question that we get all the time is you have young couples who are still in college, they get married, and they have other people who are helping to support them. If you're not in a position where you're self-supporting, where you're taking care of yourself, it wouldn't make sense that you siphon off some of the money that other people are providing you with to help you out for this extended period of time. It doesn't make sense that you should be giving away Maaser Kesefim when the money that you're getting is not even yours. And therefore, we assume that Maaser Kesefim is something that only a person who has the ability to give Maaser Kesefim should be giving. So what do? You get a paycheck, you have, you know, the way we do it is just to keep it simple and that we know what we're doing and to make sure that we fulfill our obligation. We make sure that we have a separate account. And every time that we get, that anything comes in, you take off 10% immediately, you just put it into that account. Every time you write out a check or you send money somewhere, you take it off of that account. That's the easiest way, or whatever, however everyone else wants to do it. So I have this other account, and it's set aside for my Maaser Kesefim, and that is the accumulation from all the money that I've made over the year. I put that into that account. Now, there is no obligation to give away the money immediately. It's not that the minute you have Maaser Kesefim, you have to give it away to the first person that comes to your door. No. Person has a right to use discretion and to think about how they want their money to be spent and where they want it to go. We have that ability. We have that right to give it to a place that feels more comfortable to us. So, a question that we get every year is, can I take money from my Maaser Kesefim account and use it toward my mitzvah of Matanos Le'Avyonim or Mishloach Manos? Would I be allowed to do that or perhaps not? So we have to look at a Gemara Meseches Chagiga on Daf Zayin. That's number Beis. Where the Gemara says, Kol Davar Shebechova Eino Ba Ela Min HaChulin. The Gemara tells us, say for example, somebody, God forbid, makes a mistake on a Shabbos, and they're Mechalo Shabbos. What's the halacha if you're Mechalo Shabbos? Unintentionally, in the times of the Beis Hamikdash, you got to bring a carbon. It's going to cost you. So you better think before you do things on Shabbos. So, not only in the times of the Beis Hamikdash, the Gemara even assumes if we're Mechalo Shabbos today, we got to keep it in mind when the Beis Hamikdash is going to be rebuilt, we might have to bring all those carbonos. Okay? I don't know. We'll have to figure it out then. But certainly when we have a Beis Hamikdash, if a person is Mechal HaShabbos B'Shogeg, if you make a mistake, and you are Mechal HaShabbos, the halacha is you have to make sure to bring a carbon to the Beis Hamikdash. So now I have an obligation. How much does it cost to buy a cow? I assume, I don't know, $500, let's say. I have no idea, but let's assume $500. Now it just so happens to be, on top of my obligation to spend the $500 to bring this carbon because I have to repent for this terrible avera that I did on Shabbos, I now have a secondary obligation. Why? Because now it's Pesach, and now I have an obligation to bring a carbon every Yom Tov when I go visit the Beis HaMikdash. So let me just take care of two obligations in one. I will spend $500, bring a cow to the Beis HaMikdash, and with that, I will make sure to fulfill my obligation of number one, the terrible aveir I did on Shabbos, and number two, will take care of my obligation that I have for the holiday of Pesach when I go visit the Beis HaMikdash. The answer is that doesn't work. Why? Because you have two different accounts. You have two different obligations. One obligation is you got to spend $500 on the animal that was designated for your Chilul Shabbos that you did. That has to be brought to the Beis HaMikdash. Number two, says the Gemara, God gave you a second obligation, and that is that you have to bring a carbon every time you visit the Beis HaMikdash, and that is not something that can be done via the other carbon that you had an obligation to bring outside of this one. So, for example, I get a letter from the IRS. It says you paid your taxes, but you were short $500. You were short $1,000. So I have to send them a check. The very next day, I get a letter, not from the federal government, but I get a letter from the state government that says, you were short on your taxes, you got to pay $1,000. Can I send in one check and assume that that's going to take care of both? Of course not, because I got one letter from the state and one letter from the federal government. Obviously, you can't just write one check. That's not going to take care of them. You have two different obligations. And therefore, the Gemara says, whenever a person has one obligation, they cannot use that money for a secondary obligation that they also have to take care of. That is a pretty simple concept. And based on that, there is a discussion that the Maharil in the 1300s had with regard to Mishloach Manos and Matanos Le'Avyonim. Look what he writes in number Gimel. The Maharil was one of the great Chachmei Ashkenaz, Rabbi Yaakov Alevi ben Moshe Mullen in the 1300s in Germany. So the Maharil writes, is a person able to use the money that was separated for Meiser Ksafim? I have this special tzedakah account. Am I allowed to take that money and use it toward these mitzvahs? Delo nafik b'moes meiser. He says his conclusion is you cannot use your meiser money. Kiven ditakana midirabananhu habi davar shabachova. Since the Chachamim said, on Purim you have an obligation to give meiser ksaf, to give matanos le'avyonim and to give mishloach manos, you can't take money that was already designated for a different mitzvah and use it toward this one. And therefore, he says, this is something that we should make sure to be careful not to do. And this is quoted the halacha in the Magen Avram. So take for another example. You have people who come and use the services of a shul. So we have an obligation to pay shul membership because we use the services of a communal institution. And that goes for anything. We send our children to a school, we have an obligation to pay the tuition of the school because we're using the services. So the question comes up every year. People want to give their shul membership from Meiser Ksafim. So the Achronim discuss this. The Pnei Yeshua has a tshuva about it. He says, absolutely not. The same way you can't pay your membership in the gym with your Meiser Ksafim money, you use the services of a gym, you got to pay for that service. So the same goes for any other service that you use. You cannot take money that was designated for tzedakah and give it to the shul for your obligation. Now, you want to go above your obligation to the shul. Let's say membership in a shul is going to be whatever X amount of dollars, and now the shul is having a building campaign and you want to give something above what your obligation is. No one's obligated to give toward that. That's if you choose to want to be involved, so you can be involved. Or the school is having some special opportunity that you can give money for something. Since that's not my primary obligation, certainly I can take that from the Meiser money. That's what it's made for. But when we're talking about your absolute obligation, we would say this is something one is not allowed to do because it's what we refer to as a davar shebechova, and you cannot use that money for two different obligations that you might have. So as much as this is the case, as much as it is true, let me just qualify the statement with regard to Matanos Le'Avyonim, and then we'll take your question. What is our obligation of Matanos Le'Avyonim on Purim? How many people do we need to give to? What? We need to give to two... What? We need to give to two people. So let us just qualify the statement. We have this new practice which drives me up the walls, that people knock on your door the entire duration of Purim and expect you to give them money for causes that you never had any interest in giving money to. We don't have an obligation to do that. Let us just make it clear. It's a very nice thing. It's wonderful that people want to give tzedakah. It's gotten totally out of control, and we have no obligation to support all those causes. The Gemara does say that on Purim, a person should feel kalaposhe yado nosnunlo. Somebody who sticks out their hand and is really in need, you're never supposed to turn them away. That's on Purim. You should be a little bit nicer than you normally would be on a regular day of the year. That does not mean that when people are nasty and they come to you and start yelling at you that what you gave is not enough, we don't have an obligation. That is not the nature of Purim. That is not the obligation. My father told me on many occasions, and I've seen it. I think I said this recently. Did I? Must have said in a different year. My father gives away so much of the money that he makes, of the little money that he makes. He gives a lot of it away. And we have people lining up at my parents' door every single day of the week, every single night. When he comes home from a shir at 11 o'clock, he is followed into his home by tons of people. And this happens every single day. And they think he runs a bank. I'm not sure what they think. But he's just a nice person, and he gives everybody. And I remember on a number of occasions that my father will give what I thought was a respectable amount of money for a simple person like him. And he gives someone a $100 check, which I think is nice when you have no relationship at all with this person or with the institution that they're coming to fundraise for. So he gives the guy a $100 check. The guy starts yelling at him. It's not enough. What a busha, what a bizayon. How do you give such a thing? And he starts arguing. So my father, on many occasions, took the check back, ripped it up, and asked the person to leave. And I remember I asked him, isn't that humiliating? How do you do that to such a person? You know, I understand that they were disrespectful, but it's not really very nice. And my father said, his answer to me was, the pasuk says, tachanunim yedaber rush, which means, if a person is poor, if a person is needy, they will talk with a certain level of humility. So he says, it's clear to me that when people respond to me in such a way, it means they're really not in need, and my money should not be going to such a cause. That is the principle my father taught me from a very young age, and I think it's a good guiding light for those of us who sometimes have questions whether or not the amounts that we give are appropriate, I think sometimes that's a interesting way to gauge when you see the response, the reaction of a person to the money that you give. So on Purim, again, the Gemara says, Kalaposhet yadu nosnim. If a person is really in need and they stick out their hand, you're supposed to be nice. You're supposed to give money. But at the same time, that does not mean that we have an obligation to clear ourselves out or to make ourselves crazy and to ruin our Simchas Yamtif because we're busy entertaining everybody that walks into the house asking for money and dancing around in my living room. You know, not everybody's interested in such a thing. So we certainly do not have that obligation. Our obligation of Matanas Le'Avyonim also is not always able to be fulfilled by giving it to this yeshiva or that local institution. That's not Matanas Le'Avyonim. Matanas Le'Avyonim means we give money to a person who does not have money. Obviously, all the yeshivas need money and all the institutions need, and they're all wonderful and they're all great, and the mikvahs and everything, but that's not the mitzvah on Purim. The mitzvah on Purim is to give to a poor person. I know when I was in the White Shul, I used to do this. Here, it's a little bit more difficult for me, but when I was in the White Shul, I used to ask Rabbi Feiner before Yom Tov, tell me two families who are not going to be able to afford Pesach this year. And I always used to give cash. I used to go to the person's house in the middle of the night, Purim night, and slip it under the door. They didn't know who it came from. And I think that's the greatest way to do the mitzvah of Matanas Le'Avyonim. Find two people that you know with certainty are really in need. That is the mitzvah of Matanas Le'Avyonim. For that, we are told, you're not allowed to take from your Ma'aser Kesafim to fulfill that obligation. However, for all the rest of the money that we give at Purim, which is above and beyond our obligation of Matanas Le'Avyonim, certainly we assume one is allowed to take money from the Ma'aser Kesafim account and give that money to anyone who is in need or to any institution that comes to your home. The only time we say you're not allowed to use that money is when we're talking about the primary obligation of giving to those who really are needy and fulfilling my obligation of Matanas Le'Avyonim on Purim. Question? I think the Gemara says she has to give for each one separately. I think so. What? I'm almost positive that the Gemara says you have to bring for each one. Yeah.